Justice O'Connor will not be participating in the oral arguments in the last two cases, but she'll be participating in the decisions in the cases. Next case is 07-1111, Disciplinary Counsel versus Eric Kyle Hyland. Mr. Hyland.
May it please the court, Your Honor. I am the respondent, Eric Kyle Hyland. I would ask that some time be reserved for responding, 7 minutes if possible.
Watch your time on the clock there. It'll tell you how much time you have remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, I would stress the importance of the main argument that I had made about the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and the right against self-incrimination. I believe that entirely throughout the decision of the Board of Grievances, that was used again and again. It was used throughout the findings as an aggravating factor and in the final statement upon sanctions upon which this decision was made. I do not believe that this court can put itself in the place of those who have made the findings of facts as to why they made their decision by merely taking out that factor. I think that it appears to be an essential factor. Unlike the assertions made by disciplinary counsel, I don't think that we can guess and put ourselves in the place of those who listened and what they decided.
If an attorney takes the Fifth in a disciplinary action, how then does one proceed in the disciplinary hearing against that attorney? You have to just get whatever outside evidence you can, and the attorney is not compelled to answer any questions or respond, despite the fact that he has a privilege and a license?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Why is the license revocation hearing subject to a Fifth Amendment privilege?
The U.S. Supreme Court made that decision in Spivak versus Klein, and we can see through all of the decisions that have happened since that date, that decision has never been overturned.
So you take the Fifth, because you're entitled to under the Constitution in the U.S. Supreme Court case. Why can that not be used then as evidence that you're not cooperating? I mean, you have a license, you have a privilege to take the Fifth, but you have consequences to a privilege in a license to that taking of the Fifth, which is very different than in a criminal situation.
Yes, Your Honor. And what the court said was that right was so important, that license, that it could not be used as a threat to give up so important a right as the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
So we just let them continue to practice when we think there's wrongdoing because we can't get them to testify? Is that our answer?
Your Honor, if the only way that one could find something out was simply through an individual themselves, no, we would not prosecute them for the crime, and no, we would not revoke a license. That's, however, not the case here. It's not the entirety of the decision, but it is fully intertwined through the decision. And furthermore, a very important point would be that there are no allegations of wrongdoing about the facts themselves, about the documents that have been requested. So there are no, it would be a red herring, a non-issue, as to making an assumption about those documents based on the fact of asserting the Fifth Amendment. This is merely a statement. I mean, the use of it here was merely to state non-cooperation. That was the sole purpose. There was no allegation of wrongdoing outside of that.
I guess part of the complication here is you originally agreed to give the documents and then you refused to. Can that be considered non-cooperation when you originally, you never asserted the Fifth originally, you did that later.
Actually, Your Honor, in the record itself, the actual assertion was that there would be an attempt to get those documents. If one looks at the case itself, it's been a large number of years. If they were readily available, they would be brought. There was even an offer to give alternative information about income if those documents couldn't be gotten. And again, once one realizes, once one realizes the importance of that right, then of course it should supersede such a prior statement to attempt to cooperate in getting those documents. Absolutely. Once one realizes that it does apply, the Fifth Amendment does apply, and it's exactly on point with the U.S. Constitution's interpretation by the U.S. Supreme Court, at that point, no, it should not be used. I would further go on to state that as to count three in the case, the disciplinary counsel has admitted that there was no contrary evidence, and it would defer to the decision of this court. There was no evidence contrary or to negate the evidence that was brought on that count, and that count should not be a part of the decision. And in count two as well, there was a decision to not accept any dishonesty and fraud in that count, but was conduct unbecoming. And as I said before, count four with the non-cooperation was intertwined in every part of the decision, and that would make that entire decision suspect were it to be adopted as it is, being essential parts, major parts of aggravating factors.
Did you say there was no fraud in count two? Or did I miss
that? Was the decision of the board of yes, that was the decision that had been recommended to the court.
I thought you entered misdemeanor pleas and were convicted of three counts of defrauding creditors. Is that factually correct?
No, that there would probably be a problem with that, and that was also brought up.
You were not convicted of three misdemeanor counts of defrauding creditors in violation of 29-13-45 misdemeanors.
There were pleas that were put forth. Yes, Your Honor. There were three pleas, but there was only one conviction. There was only one sentence, if it were to be accepted as a sentence. And at the time, I had stated that that would be correct. However, in looking at how the Ninth Appellate District is interpreting State versus Embry, despite what the legislature has done to change that holding, that would not appear even at this point to be a single conviction. It appeared at the time to be one single conviction. And because it was an Alford plea, it could well be interpreted that the court found no substantial findings to at least two of the pleas. Remember that in an Alford plea, the court needs to carefully examine the facts to see if there's any substantial evidence which would support those pleas. And in this case, it gave a single sentence or a single conviction, but it did not state specifically what that applied to. And under the interpretation of the Ninth Appellate District at this time, it has been sending cases back and refusing to accept that it has jurisdiction for appeals, stating that these are not proper sentences, these are not convictions, until all of the requirements are complied with in a single sentencing statement. The pleas that were made, the the convictions and sentences that were found, how they apply to the specific specific actions. So even that would be questionable at this time. And it was also brought up as whether these defrauding creditors was a lesser included offense. And it would not be in this particular case.
But the pension checks were deposited into your IOLTA account.
Some. It's unclear, Your Honor, because of the fact that only a small portion of those checks were deposited, perhaps as little as 20% of the monies involved at the time from my mother and father-in-law. And that may be a little bit unclear in that decision.
Well, the board concluded that you acted with a dishonest, selfish motive, committed multiple offenses, failed to cooperate. It seems to me that even if we eliminate the failure to produce income or tax records, that there's sufficient conduct here to justify an indefinite suspension. If you take out your Fifth Amendment argument and give you that, what's your response to the other findings, conclusions of the board, the panel and the board, that you use the IOLTA account essentially to, they say, to defraud nursing homes? That's a pretty serious finding, is it not, for a lawyer?
I would say yes, that would be a serious finding, and I did not negate the seriousness of it. Part of what one would see in reading the brief of the disciplinary council is that it appears that I've negated the harm. But the actions that would have occurred without any actions that I did. And I also stated that I disagreed with the law and I disagreed with the facts that were found. I did not disagree that the accounting should have been done much better. The accounting should have been done appropriately. There's no question of that. I would have a problem even representing myself as to oppose to evidence. For example, even the evidence that was brought was not there was no chain of custody, and it would be of as the disciplinary counsel's witness stated, there's no way to verify it at this time, even in its own accuracy. And yet these facts have been used to show clear and convincing evidence. I see I have 2.5 minutes left on the clock. Yes. May I?
Thank you, Mr. Hyland. Mr. Calgeri.
Good morning. Thank you. If please the court, Joseph Calgeri, Assistant Disciplinary Counsel for Relator. I would like to address three issues. The first issue is respondent's erroneous assertion that the board's finding of a failure to cooperate deprived him of his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. The second issue is the timing of the amended complaint. And the third issue is the board's recommended sanction of an indefinite suspension. But just briefly, I would like to clarify one question that Justice O'Donnell asked of the respondent. With respect to count two, the board did find that the relator did not prove by clear and convincing evidence an A4 violation, conduct involving fraud, dishonesty, deceit, or misrepresentation. But respondent's plea to the misdemeanor convictions actually was related to count one. So that may explain the discrepancy there.
A question I wanted to follow up, though. The nursing homes did not receive the money they were entitled to receive because the checks had been deposited into the respondent's IOLTA account.
Precisely.
How much money are we talking about?
By my calculation, which is evidence contained in the record, it appeared to be over $165,000 that remained unpaid at the time of the death of respondent's in-laws.
Thank you.
With respect to the Fifth Amendment claim, it simply is erroneous. As Justice Stratton pointed out, the major difference here between respondent's conduct in asserting the Fifth Amendment right on the morning of the hearing and the conduct in Spivak versus Klein is that respondent's failure to cooperate was solely based upon conduct that occurred before the hearing and before respondent ever asserted a Fifth Amendment right. Respondent voluntarily agreed to produce his federal tax returns on four separate occasions. He failed to produce them by the time of the hearing, and therefore he was charged with a failure to cooperate, and the board found that based upon his conduct before he ever even asserted the Fifth Amendment, he was guilty of failure to cooperate. In Spivak, which is the 1967 United States Supreme Court decision, that's a very narrow holding, and relator takes no exception to it. In Spivak, that involved a New York lawyer that was disbarred for nothing other than asserting a Fifth Amendment right and refusing to testify. There was no other evidence of misconduct. And as Chief Justice Moyer pointed out, even if we were to give respondent the Fifth Amendment argument, we have seven disciplinary rule violations spanning four counts in one complaint and criminal conduct that spanned 3.5 years. Even if you were, which I'm not suggesting this court does, but even if you were to give him the Fifth Amendment argument, we're still left with plenty of evidence to justify an indefinite suspension. Further, in 1996, this court stated in Justice Stratton's opinion in Ray Judicial Complaint against Carr that a respondent in a disciplinary proceeding is not afforded the same due process protections as they are in a criminal case. Although the board in this case placed very little weight on respondent's refusal to answer two questions regarding his federal tax returns, they did treat it as one part of one aggravating factor, and that is a submission of false evidence, false statements, or other deceptive practices. But that was completely appropriate and in line with this court's holdings that an attorney in a disciplinary proceeding that refuses to participate or otherwise refute the allegations assumes the risk of an adverse inference. And that's exactly what the respondent did in this case. After agreeing on four separate occasions to produce the information, on the morning of the hearing, he equivocally asserted a Fifth Amendment right, and therefore the board said that contributed as an aggravating factor. That's the only weight that the board gave his refusal to answer those two questions. Despite respondent's assertions, the board generally was impressed with respondent's lack of candor and credibility and the depth of the misconduct as it related to the substance of the case. The second argument that I would like to touch on is the timing of the amended complaint. Although it's not addressed today in Mr. Hyland's argument, he did raise it in his objections, and I would simply state that the relator complied with all aspects of GovBar Rule 5, the Rules and Regulations Section 9G. The amended complaint was filed 20 days before the hearing to the satisfaction of the panel chair after good cause was shown. Respondent also argued that he was denied due process because he did not have an opportunity to respond in a timely manner to the allegations in the amended complaint. Well, the fact of the matter is, the respondent did respond to the allegations in the amended complaint. He actually denied them on the morning of the hearing in a written answer. Secondly, the respondent is not entitled to a 20-day response period as you are in a formal complaint. Under 11D, once an amendment is made, the party affected by the amendment is only entitled to a reasonable opportunity to respond, and respondent was provided with that. The amended complaint involved actually was identical to the formal complaint, but for the addition of the failure to cooperate, which was very simple, straightforward matter, required little preparation. The final point that I would like to make involves the recommended sanction of an indefinite suspension. One cannot ignore the fact that respondent engaged in a criminal scheme to defraud various nursing homes that lasted 3 years. Without repeating all the facts, I would just like to quote the board's opinion because I think they did an excellent job in summing up the misconduct just in count one. The board stated in paragraph 21, basically, respondent used his IOLTA account to launder money from Emmett and Catherine Holbrook. The retirement and pension checks came in almost every month, and then he doled them out in unmarked checks payable to cash on almost a daily basis. By following this procedure, he and his wife were able to keep the retirement and pension funds out of the hands of the nursing homes and Medicaid. Respondent's conduct was blatantly criminal, and it was blatantly fraudulent.
What was the name on that IOLTA account?
The name on the IOLTA account was Eric, State of Ohio, Eric K. State of Ohio Trust Account. I'm sorry, it was Legal Aid Trust Account, State of Ohio, Eric K. Hyland. And the board found, by clear and convincing evidence, that that constituted an A4, and that is what Relator originally charged. Respondent offered an explanation at the hearing for why that account was entitled the way it was. Relator did not present any evidence to refute that, so I would leave that to the sound judgment of the court as to whether or not that name of the account constitutes an A4 violation.
Mr. Caliguri, originally the relator asked for a 2-year suspension, is that correct?
That is correct.
But after reviewing the panel's report, you are now in line with what they are.
Exactly. Not just the panel's report, but having had an opportunity to go back and read the entire transcript of the proceeding, I think it becomes apparent that the depth of the misconduct, coupled with the respondent's evasiveness, lack of candor, his misleading testimony, warrants the harsher sanction of an indefinite suspension. So I would simply ask that this court impose and adopt the board's recommended sanction of an indefinite suspension. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Caliguri. Mr. Hyland, you've saved 2.5 minutes of your time.
Your Honors, I would like to respond to the statement of $160,000 that Mr. Caliguri made the disciplinary counsel. In section 12 of the board's decision, said between 1998 and 2001, there was approximately $40,000, and it combines money from Patricia Hyland and the in-laws. Patricia Hyland's amount would be approximately $20,000. So it would actually be about $20,000. If there were $160,000, then only $20,000 would have been involved in this account. This is the kind of factual misleading that is in this decision.
Has restitution been made in this case?
There has been no request for any kind of restitution of any kind, not in any criminal case or any civil case.
No. You just said there's an amount of money of $20,000 not accounted for.
That would be the only amount that had gone through the IOLTA account, yes, Your Honor.
And all the nursing homes have all been paid in full?
By paid in full, what would you mean? The nursing homes, I do not know what you mean. That this money would certainly not come close to paying the nursing homes. The nursing homes would be a great deal more money than that.
I just have one other question. Are you connected with the Legal Aid Society?
No, I've done court-appointed cases, but the only connection with the Legal Aid Society was when the bank assistant asked where the interest would go to the account, and insisted on putting that name upon it, because that's where the interest would come from, or where the interest on the account would go to. That's what was argued to me.
Let me understand. The bank officer titled your IOLTA account the Legal Aid Fund. Am I right? Is that what you're telling us?
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor.
So it wasn't your IOLTA account. It was what the bank officer did.
The bank officer told me that was what they were required to do, yes.
Is that okay. In the record? Is that in the testimony that was offered to the panel?
Yes, Your Honor.
That information?
Yes, Your Honor. If there are
Okay.
No other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Hyland. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.